Today on the Inland Journal podcast, why is America so divided? Every day you see and hear people opine on that. And now former Gonzaga Business School Dean Bud Barnes is taking his shot at it, starting with an obligatory swipe at his profession.
It was, I believe, President Reagan who said, if you put five economists in a room, you'll probably get six opinions. And there's some truth to that.
Barnes spoke Wednesday at Gonzaga's annual economic symposium at the Davenport Grand Hotel. In this podcast, we'll hear excerpts from his talk. He cited four areas that he thinks contribute to what he calls the economic divide in the U.S. They include income and wealth distribution, immigration, outsourcing of American jobs, and international trade and tariffs. He showed slides that illustrated the trend toward concentration of wealth in fewer hands. It's not the rich getting richer that's the problem, he says. That means there's more money to invest and to hire people. The issue is where that wealth is coming from. In some cases, he says, it's coming at the expense of people at the lower end of the economic spectrum.
This is a prescription for social tension. Social tension among those who are finding themselves left out. Even among those who are working, left out.
Barnes then talked about the 2017 federal tax cut and offered his thoughts for how that will affect the wealth gap.
And in there, we saw that everyone across the board is receiving a tax cut, and that's good. There are some changes in deductions and exemptions, and that's all good as well. But the point is that it's across the board for all income categories. Also, there was more than 30% cut in company or corporate taxes, which again is quite remarkable. With the idea behind that tax cut is that those of us who are involved in those businesses, that we will then be able to take that money and plow it back into capital expansion, to improvement in productivity, adding more opportunities for employees, and building the business beyond where it was prior to 2017. What is happening is that is happening. Also along with that are what we refer to as companies receiving this really 30% reduction in taxation. We're seeing an increase in dividends. All of us who own shares of stock somewhere in this world, we are seeing that our income from dividends, another flow, is growing quite significantly. Companies across the nation are increasing dividends. The third activity that's coming out of the corporate tax cuts is what we refer to as buybacks. And this is where the companies are reaching back into the outstanding shares of stock that are trading in the market and buying those shares or a significant portion of those back. And what it does when it retires those outstanding shares, think about this for a moment. The outstanding shares leads to an increase in the declared earnings per share. And if you are a stockholder, if you're an investor in any one of those companies, all of a sudden the earnings per share of the stock you own is going up. And as we all know from the simple law of supply and demand, when that value goes up, that creates an excess demand for the shares of stock in lieu of the amount of shares outstanding. And when you have demand exceeding supply, you have a further push up in the price of the shares of those securities. Who owns those securities? It's that 20%, that 40%, that maybe 60% of those quintiles with by far the more significant portion of that wealth going into those particular individuals' hands who own significantly more shares of stock than those who are at the lower two quintiles. That, as a future concern, is one that I think we all need to, in somewhat in a sobering way, take a look at, not from a standpoint of what we do, but what we're going to see happening in America if that transition between the poor and the wealthy continues to widen.
Bud Barnes then went on to talk about the effect of the immigration debate on the American economy.
We are 2 million workers short in agriculture. 2 million. Our farms that produce vegetables, fruits, berries, as you can see up there, livestock, are not able to go out and find the workers to help both cultivate, harvest, and then pack and get those products to market in a timely fashion. Our farms are really suffering because of this inability to hire farm workers. And we know that 60 to 70% of the workers on our farms and our ranches today are unauthorized, 60 to 70%. And the reason is because if they apply for the H-2 visa for landed immigrants, the auditing that goes on is continuous. It's a headache for farmers. It creates a real dilemma. And many of them say, I'm just going to try to skirt around it and not even expose these people to the immigration. This labor shortage results in about a $5.5 billion loss in our GDP every year. Not only is it a loss in GDP, but if there is taxation that comes off of these incomes that are being generated, that's a loss as well. Fewer U.S. workers are willing to take on those jobs. And in fact, any of us in this room who has walked down the streets of our city or any other city in America, how many signs do you see that says, now hiring, help wanted? We are at full employment at 3.8%. So we've put our farmers at a complete disadvantage.
Barnes criticized the president and the Congress for their inability to develop more effective ways for farmers and other companies who can't find labor here to import it.
We're missing an opportunity with the positions that we are taking, not just from the White House. This cuts across both houses of Congress, the Senate and the House of Representatives. We know that this inability or this unwillingness for those groups to get together and come up with a solution to redesign our guest worker program. My goodness, as the President of the United States, bring that core group of individuals from both houses of Congress together, and if you want to lead, give them 60 days to come up with a better plan for bringing immigrants into this country as guest workers. You can do that. That can be done. Tie aid to the triangle. We're giving aid. Don't take the aid away from Honduras, from El Salvador, from Guatemala, from Nicaragua, or Costa Rica. If anything, let's tie our aid to those countries with requirements for improved education, for subsistence monies for companies that will expand their operation and produce better goods, for training of workers, all of those things that would keep the workers in their countries and not want them to migrate in a caravan to our borders. That can be done. These people don't want to leave their countries. That's where they were born and raised. If you think about what happened when the coal mines went down, and I grew up in this part of Ohio, but when the coal mines went down in West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky, did those people flee those states? No. They're still there. Their roots are there. And the same is true with our neighbors in Central America. But to address that in the way that we're addressing it, in my opinion, is probably not a good direction to go in. The H-1 visa program, blocking students, making it difficult for foreign students to attend our colleges and universities, is, I think, a path we should retreat from and revisit that and let these young men and women come to the United States to be educated. Their parents are spending thousands and thousands of dollars to get them ready to come to America to be educated. The finest collegiate institutions in the world rest right here in the 50 states of our country. And yet, we block these kids from coming, that they will spend their money on tuition, on housing, on clothes, on transportation, on food, on travel. And yet we put up the barriers. Revisit our Muslim country immigration ban.
The speaker is former Gonzaga Business School Dean Bud Barnes, giving a speech Wednesday at Gonzaga's annual economic forum. He then went on to address outsourcing by American firms who build factories to build their goods overseas. Barnes says it's true that many American industries, such as clothing manufacturing, have been harmed due to outsourcing. He says he understands the president's desire to get American companies back to making things in America, but he says outsourcing also has its benefits.
What it does, it gives those countries where we are outsourcing manufacturing, it gives the employees an opportunity to have a better income, to increase their lot in life, to take that income and use it to help either educate themselves or their children, to increase their intellectual capacities, to travel, to have a better diet. And then, as their incomes grow, it gives them an opportunity to acquire products that some of which may come from the United States of America or fly on a Boeing airplane. Now, is outsourcing adverse to labor? In some cases, absolutely. We have had industries that have gone down because of outsourcing. Furniture, clothing, as I just mentioned, and there are many more. But the employment that was in those industries when they started to weaken is transitory, and it moves, and it relocates into oftentimes as, if not better paying, at least as good a paying employment opportunity as they left when their business shut down. Finally, outsourcing does something that I think a lot of us don't really get a hold of. Think of it this way. If I can buy a pair of blue jeans for $50 that were made in a foreign country, they may have the name Wrangler or Levi on them, Lee, could be Kirkland. If I can buy that pair of Levi's or blue jeans for $50 made in a foreign country, that if I bought it from a manufacturer here in the United States that would have cost me, let's say, $75, all of a sudden I have $25 more money to spend. That's what I refer to as a wealth effect. And we're experiencing wealth effects all over our country. Every time we buy a product made in a foreign country that is of quality that we enjoy and at a price that's lower than what it would cost to be made here in the United States, We are receiving a wealth effect. That's a windfall to us.
Barnes says expecting American manufacturing companies to come back to the U.S. in large numbers is wishful thinking. Instead, he says make the most of the effects of outsourcing.
Outsourcing is not a one-way street. Foreign companies are outsourcing to the United States, not to the same degree that we are. They're not as large, but as a group, they may be. But they're investing in America, they're investing in American companies, they're building products in America. We have, I believe now, 12 foreign automobile manufacturers producing cars in the United States at high wages. And those cars are going into Mexico, Canada, the United States, and other parts of the world that are more convenient for them. And what they're doing is they're creating opportunities in insurance, finance, banking that otherwise they would be using in the country in which the product is sourced. And this is true through a number of foreign manufacturers who see opportunities to use American talent to help produce the products that they want to export themselves.
Finally, Barnes offered his thoughts about international trade and tariffs.
We know, if you go back through history, we know that a free enterprise society operates on free trade. Tariffs do nothing but interfere with the free market flow of goods and services. Tariffs are a tax. It's a tax on whoever buys that product coming into our country. We already know today that if you're talking about appliances in your home, they're already up by 10% and expected to go up maybe by 20% if these tariff talks break apart between the United States and China. We know that. We know that the cost of imported automobiles, those not made in the United States, is going to go up because of the tariffs on steel. We know that producing for all of the contractors in this room who are buying steel today on the construction that's undergoing in this state, we know that the price of that steel is probably up by 20 or 30%. And the thing is, we don't have the Republic and Youngstown steel companies like we had before, and Wheeling Steel. We have U.S. Steel, Nucor, AK Steel, which primarily makes stainless, and a lot of the other steel we get comes off from offshore. But to throw tariffs up, it really is an imposition and a heavy cost on our contracting, part of our society. And it's going to, building costs are going up, the wealth effect starts to get eroded.
Tariffs lead to retaliation, Barnes says, and that, he believes, has its effect on companies in the inland Northwest, especially those small companies that rely heavily on trade to stay in business.
Our ranchers and our farmers, those who are producing fruits and vegetables, wheat and grains, livestock, are facing this threat. If this doesn't get resolved, and if we can't bring these barriers down, we've already walked away from the Trans-Pacific Agreement, the partnership. We have reworked NAFTA, which is to our advantage, except now the president has come back and said he may throw tariff barriers up against Mexico if they don't stop the immigration. This is all in flux, it really is. If you look at the state of Washington, how much we depend on export. Of course, Boeing is there with the airplanes. Soybeans, wheat, corn, and right down the line.
Clarence Bud Barnes is a former dean of the Gonzaga School of Business. He spoke Wednesday at the university's annual economic forum at the Davenport Grand Hotel. Thursday on the Inland Journal podcast, two perspectives about vaccines. We'll talk with the head of a national organization that has sued the government over issues of vaccine safety. He believes the government's oversight system is broken. And we'll hear from the head of the Immunization Assessment and Outreach Program at the Spokane Regional Health District. To find and subscribe to the Inland Journal podcast, search for Inland Journal in iTunes, NPR One, or Google Play, or find it on the Inland Journal page at SpokanePublicRadio.org. And please send your story ideas to InlandJournal@KPBX.org. Thank you for listening. I'm Doug Nadvornik.